The views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of KLAY or those who advertise their products or services on this station.
Welcome to Know Your Rights, the show dedicated to helping educate you, the listener, on your legal rights and resources available. Our goal, to empower and put you in charge of your case. I'm your host, Attorney Noah Davis, broadcasting live from the studios of KLAY 1180 in Tacoma, Lakewood, Washington. Be sure to check out our website at www.knowyourrights.com as we post the audio for each show, as well as follow-up information on each program. You can also email me at noah@knowyourrights.com. And you can always visit clay1180.com for more information on me, this show, and additional programming on your conversation station. I feel like I'm a little bit out of breath today because I had to rush in. Traffic was bad. It took a while to get here. And now I'm in studio. Sometimes you want a moment to settle in, take a breath, and relax a little bit. Today, I'm not going to be able to do that. We're going to launch right into things, which is great for you. This is episode 34 of Know Your Rights. Today's show is focused on landlord-tenant issues. You know, that's a big one. A lot of you email me questions about topics and issues that you want to hear on the show. And some of those in the past have been foreclosure, bankruptcy, another hot topic. Well, there's also creditors' rights. But the other hot topic is the one for today's show, and that's landlord-tenant. We're going to focus mostly on the tenant issues. And you know, sometimes it's hard to get an accurate read of the percentage of renters versus homeowners versus there's even a third category. You could call it the neither category, neither a renter nor a homeowner. But some studies put the number of renters at between 38% and 40% of the population of our state, the state of Washington. On the higher end of that range is, as you can imagine, it's urban regions. Seattle being one of the highest, if not the highest area for the percentage of renters. And in part, that's because of a transitory population. In part, it's because of the high cost of home ownership in the Seattle region. But Seattle has approximately 42% of the population as renters, also has one of the highest homeless populations in our state as well. Tacoma's at 39%, so a little bit on the higher end, with across the state with more rural counties and rural areas having much more home ownership and a lower rental population. And I mean, that makes sense too. If you live in a rural community, you probably, unless it's maybe the wine country or apple country regions, you're looking at a lot more home ownership out there and less even availability of apartments or apartment complexes or rental type arrangements. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, the median gross rent, so the midpoint across the state of Washington through 2016 was $1,056. That's the midpoint of rent for a one-bedroom apartment. According to the National Low Income Housing Coalition, and I'll give you a website later, it'll also be on the knowyourrights.com website, but there's this organization called the National Low Income Housing Coalition. And they say the average one bedroom in Washington rents for $1,121, while two bedroom is $1,397. At minimum wage of $11.50 an hour, you'd be looking at working for 2 weeks just to pay that rent for a one bedroom. I mean, that's amazing. If you're on a minimum wage income, a lot of people are, and you're renting the average for what a one-bedroom costs in the state of Washington, you'd be giving up 2 weeks of your pay just to pay for that one-bedroom apartment. So what you end up having to do is get a two-bedroom and a roommate and hope that works out. But good luck having minimum wage and trying to start support a family. I mean, obviously, the cost of living is really expensive. It's really expensive across the state. It's really expensive in our region. According to the National Low Income Housing Group, so that same group, I'll give you the email or the web address for later. According to that group, rental rates are the highest in King County at $1,529 per month for one bedroom. I was surprised, though, according to that website, and what you can do at the website is actually drop down by county across the state and find out what the average income is for renters and also what the average rental price is across regions and counties. But I was surprised to see that Pierce County actually boasts relatively higher wages and relatively lower rents compared with the statewide averages. On average, Pierce County residents are renting a one-bedroom for $881 a month. Now, I don't know if that's what your experience has been. That seemed a little bit low to me, but $881 a month is the average across Pierce County. And the average wage for a one-bedroom renter was $17 an hour, so approximately $34,000 a year. But economics aside, what this episode today is on Know Your Rights, it's really about you, the renter, and what your rights are. Washington's adopted additional protections for residential tenants. Yes, sorry businesses, this does not apply to you. For commercial tenants, you're really looking at contract law for the most part. But the Washington Residential Landlord-Tenant Act, which is found at RCW Chapter 5918, it provides protections for tenants. It's a set of state laws in our RCWs devoted to you, the tenant, because otherwise you cannot get these protections written into a lease. No landlord's going to give them to you. You're going to get a contract of adhesion. It's going to be presented to you, take it or leave it. So thankfully, the legislature has adopted this set of laws to help protect you. So you're going to want to listen and pay attention, because we're going to give you some tips, some advice, what not to do, what to do to help protect you. If you're a landlord, you're going to want to listen too, because you're going to be able to get some education on some of your responsibilities as well. So stay with us. We're going to talk landlord-tenant law. And coming up, we're going to be asking a landlord-tenant lawyer about your rights and what you can do. You're listening to Know Your Rights on Clay 1180.
Hi, I'm Jack Box, and I'm here to beef you up.
Beefing up breakfast!
Because right now, you can get my new steak and egg breakfast burrito, loaded with prime rib steak, hash browns, and melted cheese.
Let's get jacked!
Now we're just going to start out with a few hand-to-mouth curls.
Burrito curls!
Really tasting that prime rib steak now. And one. And chew. And one. Is everybody beefing up?
Everyone's still chewing!
Sounds like a yes to me. Beef up your breakfast with my new steak and egg breakfast burrito. Only at Jack in the Box. Limited time only. Price of participation may vary.
Hi, I'm Noah from Noah Your Rights, the show that helps educate you on your legal rights and resources available to you. You know, I want to be your lawyer, but more than that, I want to help empower you. I want to help provide you the tools that you need to be successful in your case, whether you hire me or you hire someone else. I want you to check out our website, www.noahyourrights.com. See what resources are there, see how we can help you, and if there's something that's missing, email me at noah@noahyourrights.com, and we'll see what we can do to add the material that you need to be successful in your case. Are you faced with a legal issue that you need help on? Why not try a legal plan? One of those plans is Legal Shield. You can visit www.legalshield.com, and you could learn more about what a legal plan can provide for you. Starting at $24.95, Legal Shield can provide help about debt, collection letters, bankruptcy, and family law issues, and other types of legal matters. Legal Shield, making legal services affordable since 1972.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
You've messed up your daughter's haircut. Do you A, get spiritual?
Mom, where's the mirror?
Beauty is within. Oh.
B, find the positives.
Less time blow drying, more time texting.
Or C, show empathy.
Mom, you really don't have
twinsies.
I kind of love it. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on adoption, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
This is Noah Your Rights, and I'm your host, Noah Davis. Today we're talking landlord-tenant law. Attorney Jonathan White of Lombino Martino is in the studio with us today to talk about the residential landlord-tenant law in Washington. Jonathan, welcome to the studio.
Hi, Noah. I'm glad to be here.
Let's start. Actually, you know what? I was going to start with the rental agreement, and I figured we'd kind of take this chronologically. We'd go through the rental agreement, we'd talk about some of the things that a tenant needs to know as they enter into lease, and then once they get into the lease, and then when they want to get out of the lease, and then if the landlord didn't do all the things they wanted that they should have done during the tenancy, during the leasehold, what the tenant's rights are. That was the way I wanted to take this, but you know what? I think what's on the mind of a lot of people right now is what's been in the forefront of the news, and that's this tiki apartment issue that's sort of been gripping the airwaves as far as landlord-tenant law goes. There are some jurisdictions around the state of Washington that have adopted additional protections for tenants that are in addition to what the state law has or the state law provides. Tacoma might be behind the game on that, and that's come out with this tiki apartment complex issue. So, Jonathan, why don't you tell us a little bit about what's going on? Actually, maybe you could lay a foundation and tell us what happened to bring this issue out with the tiki apartments, and then also maybe bring us up to speed about where we're at now, because some people might not be familiar with this issue, even though it's been on the news.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. And in general, landlord-tenant law is kind of one of those areas of the law that goes under the radar for the most part. It's not something that you hear about often. It's not something where you hear stories other than, you know, there's a lot of stories about the homeless issue in the population, but you don't hear about what's going on with tenants and landlords ever. It's just sort of not ever covered by the news. However, this time it was. The Tiki Apartments, most of you are probably aware of this, but whoever is not, back in May, there's a 60-unit apartment building right here in Tacoma called the Tiki Apartments. Those folks were given 26 days. This is every single unit in the complex. All 60 of them were given 26 days to move out. Most of the people in this complex were low income. Roughly a third of them were on some form of disability or some form of government subsidy. Basically, if you think about it, just the wrong group of people to do something like this to. Of course, the landlord has the right to terminate any tenancy, of course, and state law only requires 20 days notice. But just because the law says that that's what has to happen doesn't necessarily always mean that that's the right thing to do. And unfortunately, this was the case of a bad landlord kind of ruining it for all the good landlords. And now the city council is taking a look at this and talking about increasing protections to give tenants more time to move out, to give more notice, to potentially give more money in cases like this Tiki Apartments where the basis was for a remodel. So the idea would be is if the landlord wants to remodel your place, that's fine, but they're going to cut you a check on the way out. All this being said, it's been a huge, huge organizing moment for tenants in Tacoma. There's now, it started as what's called the Tiki Tenants Organizing Committee. It's now called the Tacoma Tenants Organizing Committee because it's been applied statewide. Citywide. It's a pretty big deal right now, and the city council is literally talking about adopting some additional protections that are going to go into place starting here on October 16th, depending on how they vote.
Yeah, because these residents of the Tiki Apartments, I mean, you're talking about them having to put down a new security deposit, first and last month's rent, maybe do another application fee, credit check background, the screening fee stuff. And that's if they get accepted, if they find a place, number one,
right.
And then they get accepted into it. And then they got to move all their stuff. And for some of these people that you're talking about, if they're lower income and on subsidies or on state or federal assistance, how are they going to do any of that? How are they going to get any of that those initial fees?
Exactly.
And then how are they going to move their stuff?
And a lot of these folks, from what I understand, had been there for several years. This wasn't a case of just getting rid of a bunch of transitory tenants. Some of these folks had been here 10, 15 years. Again, the landlord didn't break the law. That's important to note here. I don't want to say anything that indicates that the landlord broke the law here. They followed the law. It just turns out that it looks like the law is a little weak and potentially needs to be adjusted.
Well, so do you know if these folks had sort of an oral month-to-month agreement or whether their written contracts had expired, the leases had expired such that they were month-to-month at that point?
Mm-hmm. That's probably a good transition here into talking about lease contracts. Any lease contract, if nobody terminates it with a written instrument, whether that's from the landlord to the tenant or the tenant to the landlord, even after your lease expires, you'll just default into a month-to-month. I've seen people live month-to-month for years with, you know, nobody doing anything. It's just kind of like you just go on indefinitely.
So that was probably the situation here is where the leases had expired and they were all month to month.
And most of them, and one thing I should say, most of these people were at below market rent. I mean, there's no question that this rent was probably going to have to go up at some point. But again, it just gets back to, is it fair to kick 60 units of people out with just 26 days notice. That's what it gets down to.
So maybe to close the loop on this, and I know this is still a developing issue for the residents of the Tiki apartment complex for sure too, and I know that there are groups out there trying to help them and relocate them, but maybe you can talk a little bit about the type of protections that might be implemented by the Tacoma City Council.
Yeah, and I've got a little list of that here that I actually brought with me. The most important one, of course, is the notice to vacate. State law only requires 20 days notice to vacate, which in my opinion is a complete joke. Not a funny joke, a bad joke. 20 days to move in this day and age is just impossible. I don't know how anybody expects anybody else to do something like that. So the first thing that they're talking about is on every single notice of termination, increasing the time limit to 60 days. At least you've got 2 months instead of 20 days to look for a new place. The second thing they're trying to pass is a relocation assistance plan. So if they're going to shut down a place and remodel it, they're going to end up having to pay every tenant $2,000 in a relocation assistance fee. Hmm. Another one is 60 days notice to increase rent. Right now it's only a month. If you're going to raise the rent, you know, that's pretty nice to have at least a little bit of additional protection. Installment payments are going to be permitted according to this new law, which takes a little bit of the onus off what we were talking about when you have to move and you have to come up with a huge chunk of money up front to get a place. Seattle has passed a law recently that forces landlords to give installment payments for deposits and last month's rent and that sort of thing. And that's what Tacoma's talking about too. And most importantly, retaliation protections. So if you actually report something to the city, and the landlord turns around and terminates your tenancy because you had the nerve to say something about it, that could be an illegal move on the landlord's part as well.
You get some whistleblower protection.
Exactly.
So what about the city's taking this state law farther and giving these additional protections? Isn't there some conflict there between what the state legislature passed to protect tenants and now the city's going even farther to give additional protections?
Have
the landlords brought that?
The Seattle laws have been basically under litigation for the past 4 or 5 years. I don't know if any of you all have heard anything about Seattle's requirement recently to forbid landlords from doing criminal background checks. Mm. I can understand where that's coming from, but I can also completely see why landlords are nervous about something like this. And so that's under litigation right now. Landlords have sued about that.
On the one hand, in that case, you have the protection of other tenants at issue. And if you don't do a background check, you're going to get sued saying you didn't do a background check. You put at risk these other folks that live here, including kids. On the other hand, if you're a person that has a criminal warrant out for your arrest somewhere in some jurisdictions, something, or you have a background of domestic violence or something that's well in the past and you believe that you're reformed, you might not be able to get rented to. You're ended up living in a tent city the rest of your life, mm-hmm. or in your car because no one will rent to you.
Yeah, I can easily see both perspectives on that one. I'm not sure what the solution is to that issue. At the very least, people who owner-occupied tenancies where the owner actually lives on the property are still exempt from that rule, which I think is a nice exemption, because if I'm renting out a room in my own home, I want to be able to forbid a criminal from living there, and that's pretty fair, or an ex-criminal. But on the other hand, if you don't have any direct interest in it, and you know your criminal offense was 20 years ago, and you've lived a clean and honest and upstanding life since then, why should that thing put you to the back of the line? Because that's what it's doing right now.
So wait a minute. Do these Residential Landlord-Tenant Act provisions apply both to the 100-unit mega apartment complex and the single homeowner renting out a bedroom or two in their home?
Generally, yeah, with the exceptions of some exceptions for the owner-occupied properties. Most importantly, exceptions from discrimination.
Right, and that was one, and that's perhaps been through constitutional challenges and protections, but that was one that a lot of landlords really weren't behind. Obviously, they wanted to pick and choose who was going to live in their place
on their own property.
And if they were doing it on the basis of someone's race or national origin, it's absolutely illegal. And mm-hmm. landlords didn't understand that for the longest time. That if someone had a different religion, they couldn't ask questions about religion and that sort of thing. I mean, you take the person as they are. If you're renting your place, you need to be equal and fair.
Right. Yeah. If they can afford the rent and they pass all the other background checks, then there's no reason to deny tenancy to somebody because of something like that. Absolutely.
Well, let's end up taking a step back away from the controversial issues and maybe just start with the lease. Let's say that I want to rent an apartment and I end up finding some apartments that I think are reasonable, I'm interested in living at. So I go, and what's like the first thing that happens? Do I fill out some type of pre-screening application?
Usually you're going to start with an application. It's going to cost you a fee. It's roughly $40 to $50 most of these days. And the landlord's going to do a background check. It's usually a triple check. They're going to check your credit score. They're going to check your eviction history, your civil eviction history, whether you've had an eviction filed against you. And then third, they're going to check your criminal background.
So we talked about the criminal background, the credit check. I mean, that seems unfair too. One of the reasons why you might be renting and not owning a house is because you can't get approved for a loan, and now you can't even get approved to rent. I mean, what's the basis of denying someone?
You're right that could be considered unfair, but it's also, you know, if you're a person that has a historic problem with paying their bills, it's fair for a landlord to not want to rent to you. So there's legitimate reasons for the credit score check, as long as the landlord gets what their criteria is out in advance. So if I advise landlords, I usually tell them, be very clear with your criteria up front so people know exactly what they're getting into before they apply.
And if you're denied the leasehold or denied the ability to rent there, does the landlord have to explain to you exactly why, if it was based on one of those reasons?
They do. It's called an adverse action report, and they have to provide that to you within 7 days after you're denied. It's basically, if you get denied for a credit card or a loan or a mortgage or something like that, similar to that, where they will provide you with a written explanation of why you were denied.
If you have poor credit, but you check out criminal background wise, can the landlord say to you, you know what, I'm going to rent to you, but I'm going to increase the security deposit or some type of deposit?
Sure. Yeah, that's absolutely an option. And that happens all the time. Somebody might be kind of on the line with a credit score, but maybe the issue with the credit was years ago and they've got a great job now. They've got a good reference from their last landlord. The landlord might say, I need a last month's rent from you or a slightly higher security deposit.
You know, we could probably do a whole show on credit scores and what's good and what's bad, and then what actually people's credit scores really are compared to the national average, because I don't believe any of those numbers that we get from
Me neither, but I'm not really much of an expert on that.
Well, I'm not going to.
I agree, though.
I'm not going to hit you with many questions about that. But do you know when it comes to renting, what a good or bad credit score is?
The thing I hear usually when I'm advising landlords is really between the 600 to 650 range. As long as you've got that or higher, you're probably going to be able to find a place. If you're underneath that, then you're probably going to need to explain to the landlord what's going on. Okay, and get some letters of reference. Usually a letter of reference from your employer or your last landlord would be very helpful when you're kind of on the line there.
All right. What about when you presented this lease for these potential apartments you're going to move into? What are some of the most important things that you need to be looking at the lease? Because some of these leases now are like 15 pages or something ridiculous like that, mm-hmm. where you got to initial, you know, in all these different areas.
Yeah. Well, the thing I think is interesting is how many people don't actually read the lease. So that's the first thing to do. I speak with a lot of clients on the tenant end that ask me questions about the lease, and I say, well, what do you think about that? Well, and they say, well, I haven't read it. Mm-hmm. Got to read your lease before you sign it. It's incredibly important. Even if it's written in legalese, there's going to be some things in there that you're going to understand and not understand. So number one, read the lease. But there's other things that you have to look at. What's the lease term? How long are they promising me to live here? What's the security deposit rules? What do I have to do on the way out? Do I have to clean the place? Do I have to hire a professional cleaner on the way out? Do I have to have the carpets cleaned? Do I need to paint? What kinds of things do I have to do on the back end? What are the requirements for my security deposit? What additional requirements do I have if I need to have pets in the unit? Does the landlord even have a pet policy? What about my roommates? Do I have roommates? Do they have any additional requirements or rules that they need to be made aware of? There's a whole bunch of things that you can look into the lease. Utilities are really important. Is the landlord paying for the utilities? Am I paying for them? Do they go in my name? Does it get included in the rent? All these things are different with every lease, so it's important to figure out what yours says about your specific situation. When's the rent due? Where do I pay?
Can I smoke in my apartment?
Can I smoke in my apartment? Can I smoke marijuana in my apartment? Hmm. That's big deal these days.
Right. That's a good question. And you mentioned the roommate. I wouldn't even have thought about that. But if you rent in a two-bedroom apartment, you're the only person that they did a credit check on and that they did the criminal background check on. Next thing you know, you advertise on Craigslist or whatever. You have a buddy come in and you're charging that person rent and they have access. You give them a key. Are you breaching the lease?
Yeah, and I would say that situation that Noah just laid out, don't ever do that without the landlord approving it in writing, okay? That's a huge problem, bringing unauthorized occupants onto the property. That's going to be a problem for you as a tenant if you don't disclose it to the landlord. They might want to do a background check on anybody that's going to be there for longer than a certain period of time. And that'll be in your lease, occupancy. You can have so many people over for so long before it becomes a problem.
Jonathan, we're going to take a short break, but when we come back, I want to ask you a little bit about the sort of checklist items after you've signed the lease and you're going to move in, what you need to be looking for as you come into the apartment. You're listening to Know Your Rights on Clay, 1180 AM.
America, land of blue jeans, muscle cars, bald eagles, and burgers. And while blue jeans got all skinny on us,
I can't feel my legs.
Muscle cars lost their muscle.
Where can I plug in my hybrid?
And bald eagles got balder.
Why is that eagle wearing a hat?
No way are we giving up on burgers. That's why I'm bringing back Fast Food's first ever ribeye burgers, made with 100% premium ribeye beef on a soft potato bun. Try the all-American and blue cheese and bacon ribeye burgers, only at Jack in the Box. Made with 100% ribeye cut with seasonings added. Limited time only. Price and participation may vary.
Hi, I'm Noah from Know Your Rights, the show that helps educate you on your legal rights and resources available to you. You know, I want to be your lawyer, but more than that, I want to help empower you. I want to help provide you the tools that you need to be successful in your case, whether you hire me or you hire someone else. I want you to check out our website, www.noahyourrights.com. See what resources are there. See how we can help you. And if there's something that's missing, email me at noah@noahyourrights.com, and we'll see what we can do to add the material that you need to be successful in your case. Lawyers can cost a lot of money. I know. I'm attorney Noah Davis from the show Know Your Rights. One way that you can help address the rising cost of lawyer fees is to get a legal plan. One of those plans is Legal Shield, www.legalshield.com. Why don't you have a look at their website? The plans start at just $24.95 a month. What's that? Cost of about 7 lattes in a month? It's not a lot of money, and yet it gives you access to a lawyer and can reduce the hourly rate of those attorneys while giving you some great services. Visit LegalShield.com. You won't regret it.
Imagine if I told you that an earthquake was going to hit tomorrow right where you live. That it would be 6.5 in magnitude with aftershocks occurring twice 25 minutes apart. You'd no doubt talk with your loved ones, and you'd make a plan today. It's true, I can't tell you an earthquake will happen tomorrow. But what if it does? Shouldn't you have a plan? Go to ready.gov/communicate and make your emergency plan today. Don't wait. Communicate. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Know Your Rights, the show dedicated to helping educate you on your legal rights and resources available. Be sure you check out our website, www.knowyourrights.com. As we update the website with the audio from each program, as well as follow-up information about the topics of the show, I'm going to end up putting some websites on our or some web addresses on our website relating to landlord-tenant law, including links to a Washington Help website, as well as Attorney General's office, and some of the statistics that I opened the show with, too. Right now, we're talking with Jonathan White, from Lombardo Martino, and he's talking to us about some of the things in the leases that that we should be aware of. That's where we started at. Actually, where we left off, I said that I was going to ask you the question, and that's after you've signed the lease and you move into the apartment, what are some of the things that you need to be looking for, and is there like a checklist or something?
Yeah, there is a checklist. And really quick, my bosses would be remiss if I didn't know it's Lombino Martino. It's all good. Just had to get that in there.
Sometimes it's a tongue twister for me, so totally, I appreciate
totally.
It.
Totally. I've done that before. Let's just put it that way. Okay, so as far as the checklist goes, first of all, number one thing that's important is that the landlord can't even take a security deposit from you without giving you a checklist and a walkthrough at the beginning of the tenancy. And the reason for that is it's kind of like a time capsule. It operates as a time capsule. Here's what the place looks like in the condition it is at the time that I took occupancy of the unit. After you move in, you can't really recreate that. So it's important that that's done before you take occupancy. Don't wait on that. some tenants I talk to sometimes, oh, I've got it sitting here on my desk. I'll get to it eventually. No. Do that immediately. Like the day you get it, go through and do the walkthrough and the checklist to get it back to the landlord immediately. On the checklist, there's going to be some interesting things, and you want to be extremely careful about it. Like if you think something, if you're kind of on the borderline, should I note this on the checklist or not? Just put it on there. You know, scratch it. You have a little scratch on the tile in the kitchen. Put it on there. You know, maybe a little ding in the paint. Put it on there. Anything, a little piece of wax on the carpet, put it on there. Anything that you notice, put it on the checklist.
I mean, I guess on the one hand, you don't want to be too, I mean, you've already signed the lease, so you are getting the apartment. They can't kick you out for.
That's exactly right.
And I mean, you don't want to come off on the first day as being like over the top, but.
I'm not saying report all these things to the landlord. I'm just saying have them on your checklist as noted that you didn't cause that damage. It was there already when you moved in.
Okay.
And so this that is, you don't get charged for it on the back end.
And this is the document you end up then giving over to the landlord during the first day or the next day or something after you've moved
in. Do it quickly. That's what I'm saying. Don't sit on it. Some people sit on it for a couple weeks. Do it really quickly. I think you should do it before you even move your stuff in, personally. One other thing. This is very, very, very powerful help for folks because you've got technology in your pocket that really helps with this. Pull out your phone. Take a bunch of pictures of the unit while it's still empty. And if you've got video camera capabilities, do a 5 to 10 minute video while it's empty before you take occupancy. Narrate it too. Hey, I'm such and such and such tenant. I'm moving in. It's October 18th, 2018. And here's the condition of the place before I moved in.
That's a great idea.
Super useful if you need it down the road. Oh. You won't be able to recreate that down the road. So do it up front.
What about the lock situation? I mean, I'd be worried I'm moving into a new place that someone else still has the keys or they made copies or they gave it to someone else. But if my lock's not been changed, do I have any rights or recourse with respect to the lock?
Well, you do, but most landlords do change the locks out after tenants move out as a standard practice, but you obviously can't guarantee that that's happening. So one thing you could do is put in a written request to ask if that's been done and see if the landlord responds to that or not. Definitely understand those concerns, but it might not be something that's solvable. Yeah. You know, I do often recommend that tenants get their own security though, because you know, the landlord's not going to secure your personal location. They're going to secure the common areas, but you can get $100, $200 cameras on Amazon these days for real cheap. Just grab one.
That's also going to protect you from a situation where a landlord does an unauthorized entry,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. It could protect you from all kinds of things, especially if you're in some kind of a multi-unit complex and your neighbor does something crazy and your camera has audio. You know, that's going to pick that up. There's all kinds of things that you just don't point it into common areas. You can only use your camera in your own area.
Back in the day when I rented a long time ago, something like 15 or 16 years ago, there was a situation where I had a dog and I wasn't paying the pet rent. I didn't know if I was going to keep the dog, if it was going to stay in the apartment or not. It was a temporary thing, but I had it in there. And it just so happened, the landlord was doing these rounds of, I don't know if they were inspections or they were checking water, something, but they just entered the apartment without notice. And that's an issue, right? And
maybe
you could talk about that.
That happens all the time.
But ultimately they told me either pay or the dog's got to vacate. And I ended up not having the dog stay there anymore. But
okay.
But let's go to the issue of a landlord doing an unauthorized entry.
Okay. And that's something that happens all the time. I probably handle cases like that on almost a daily basis. My firm offers me the opportunity to talk to lots of tenants, which is really cool because most tenants can't afford attorneys. And honestly, this is an issue that comes up all the time. I'm kind of amazed. Number one thing you should understand is while you're renting a property, you have exclusive rights to possession of that property, even if the landlord owns it, which they do. Once you sign a lease, that's your home. The landlord has to give you a 48-hour written notice if they want to enter the property, except in cases of emergencies. If the place is burning down, then they're going to show up.
Or there's a massive water leak or something.
Exactly. Like that. But otherwise, if they want to enter the property, they have to give you 48-hour written notice. And technically, you can call the police if they don't do that.
Hopefully the police take it seriously.
Well, there's that. That doesn't mean the police are going to show up. I hope that they would, but that's your option.
You also have the landlord trying to justify the entry as an emergency. Oh, we had to check everybody's water heater because we think that they're outdated or they're expired or something like that.
Yeah. I'm just constantly amazed at the sort of the position on the landlord's part that I own this property so I can come and go as I please. This doesn't come up as much in the big properties because I think the big property management companies understand that. This happens all the time on mom and pop rentals, though. All the time. Like, every single day.
Would you be able to get some type of alarm, not just the cameras, but some type of inside alarm that would be triggered, or would that be deemed a breach of the lease, or does it depend on the lease?
Well, that would depend on the lease. I could see a landlord putting something into a lease contract forbidding some kind of wired security system, and if that was in there, you'd have to respond to that. But if something like that wasn't in there and you could install it without damaging the unit, I don't see any problem with that.
Because that would give you some extra protection, too, about the unauthorized entry. Because depending on how big your complex is, the landlord might know your routine and where you go when you're not there.
Right.
And you don't want...
I have, in my own home, I have cameras that I purchased for about $120 on Amazon that are motion detectors. So they're pretty much off most of the time. But I could actually... I'm sitting here in the studio here with Noah, but I could pull out my smartphone right now and look through my cameras at my home and see what's going on in my front and backyard.
Some of those cameras also send you through your phone a notification
they
if there's been motion, right?
I actually turn mine off because I'm on a pretty busy street. But yeah, you can do that. So that's an option, but you can actually turn it on motion detecting. So if you had one on the inside and somebody came inside, then mine are pointed at the outside. That's why I get the notifications all the time. But if you had them pointed on the inside at your door, that would be fantastic.
So let's say you have an unauthorized entry, which you said is a common issue, and I experienced that too. And so let's say it's going to be a common shared theme and perhaps one of the biggest worry, depending on what's in your apartment too. I mean, you might have valuables out, either might be money out, maybe there's marijuana or whatever else. Maybe there's things that you don't want people to see.
Hey, even if there's nothing, it's privacy. It's your home. Nobody has the right to come and invade your home without a darn good reason and written notice for that reason. Okay. Yeah. That's important.
So whether
but
or not
you do have a claim against the landlord. So the Landlord Tenant Act gives you a $100 claim for each violation of the unauthorized entry. You could take that to small claims court based on how many times that happened.
Sounds like a lot of work for $100 though.
Yeah, but what if they did it 10 times?
Yeah, well, I mean,
and you got a $1,000 claim.
Probably in my mind, what you'd want to do is you'd want to write a letter. You'd want to put it in writing and give it to the landlord and say you conducted an unauthorized entry into my apartment on this day, and you didn't have my permission, and see what their response is.
That's usually where we start. We send out a letter saying, here are the occurrences. And right at this point, you're at $400 for these four occurrences, listing them where they happened and saying, if you don't stop doing this, we're going to probably take you to court.
Is rental insurance an important thing for people to get?
Yeah, you should have renter's insurance. Absolutely.
How does someone go about getting rental insurance?
Well, most of the time you have renter's insurance, you can get it bundled through your other insurance. It'll be cheaper if you get it through who you're getting your car insurance through. I was a tenant myself for 17 years, and the last couple years that I was a tenant, I had my insurance through my car insurer, and it was only like $10 or $12 additional a month. So it's a pretty good deal, and it's insanely important because the landlord will not cover you if something happens that's not their fault.
You know, one thing that's a little bit confusing for some folks, and I think it was for me, is the security deposit, first and last month's rent, and then a cleaning fee, and kind of where those things go, how they can be held for one or the other, mm-hmm. what they're for.
Yeah, well, so the thing you have to remember about a deposit is it's your money. It's your money the whole time. It never is the landlord's money until after you move out and they go through what's called the deposit disposition, where they go through and assess the damage and charge you for it. But the entire time that you're living there, the security deposit is actually your money. And the landlord has fiduciary duties to hold that money on your behalf, meaning that they've got to put it in a trust account and keep it separate from their own money. So this is also something like the unauthorized entries that happens all the time.
All the time.
Landlords are not aware in general that they have to keep this money and not commingle it with their personal funds.
Yep.
Most landlords just pop that stuff right into their own checking account,
yep.
And that's illegal.
Right. So one case that I did, I represented, I don't normally do this. I mean, I'm extremely busy, but I did do a pro bono case, and I represented a tenant that was being sued by the landlord. And I'll have a tip about that case as we close out, but I'll say about the cleaning fee. What they did was they charged them a cleaning fee, and then in addition to that, they charged them additional monies about the carpet, and this was worn, the paint was worn, and all these things. But isn't that what the cleaning fee's for?
It is, and it, and that's part of the, what you're taking those pictures and video at the beginning of the tenancy. Sometimes there's no perfect solution to this problem. That's the thing I have to say up front. So what you have to do is protect yourself, because the landlord's probably going to try to do something like that. I say don't trust anyone in these situations. Get all the evidence you can. Clean the place up as best as you can on the way out. And then if they try to double charge you, take them to court.
You're listening to Know Your Rights. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Jack Box, and I'm here to beef you up.
Beefing up breakfast!
Because right now, you can get my new steak and egg breakfast burrito, loaded with prime rib steak, hash browns, and melted cheese.
Let's get jacked!
Now we're just going to start out with a few hand-to-mouth curls.
Burrito curls!
Really tasting that prime rib steak now. And one. And chew. And one. Is everybody beefing up?
Everyone's still chewing!
Sounds like a yes to me. Beef up your breakfast with my new steak and egg breakfast burrito. Only at Jack in the Box. Limited time only. Price and participation may vary.
Hi, I'm Noah from Noah Your Rights, the show that helps educate you on your legal rights and resources available to you. You know, I want to be your lawyer, but more than that, I want to help empower you. I want to help provide you the tools that you need to be successful in your case, whether you hire me or you hire someone else. I want you to check out our website, www.noahyourrights.com. See what resources are there, see how we can help you, and if there's something that's missing, email me at noah@noahyourrights.com, and we'll see what we can do to add the material that you need to be successful in your case. Hi, I'm Noah from Noah Your Rights. If you listen to my show, you know I'm a big fan of legal plans. One of those plans is Legal Shield. With the Legal Shield membership, you won't have to worry about the cost of legal help, because Legal Shield membership helps you pay for the legal services you need when you need them. Why don't you visit LegalShield.com and check out the plans, which start at $24.95. Legal Shield, providing access to legal services since 1972.
I'm Ken Griffey Sr.
And I'm Ken Griffey Jr. And we're proud to be men who speak up about advanced prostate cancer.
Prostate cancer runs in our family. I never had a problem talking about it until I was diagnosed. Aches, fatigue, or difficulty doing normal activities can mean that prostate cancer is advancing. Don't stay silent.
Step up to the plate and visit menwhospeakup.com to learn more.
This was a public service announcement from Zero, the end of prostate cancer.
Welcome back to Noah Your Rights. We're talking landlord-tenant law. We're with Jonathan White from Lombino Martino. Did I get it right that time?
That's it.
All right. So Jonathan is our in-house expert on landlord-tenant law, and we're addressing a really important issue for a lot of you listeners out there that are renters, which approximately 38 to 42% across the state are. We've talked about some of the issues involved in the lease and what you need to look out for. We've also talked about these unauthorized entries from the landlord. We've talked about some of the things that your money goes to at the outset of the application process, and then security deposit, cleaning fee, those sorts of things. But Jonathan, I wanted to ask you what are some other common issues that tenants face in addition to this unauthorized entry by a landlord?
Okay, let me give you a percentage here, just to kind of give you an idea of how big of a deal this is. If I talk to 100 clients in a month, I would, especially during the winter, I would assume that 40 to 50 of them are calling me about mold specifically. So those of you who are from Washington, you've been living your whole life with mold. People who move into the state have no idea what they're moving into. Mold is a major, major, major issue in our state. Unfortunately, the Landlord-Tenant Act is a little bit weak in this area. The Landlord-Tenant Act does not force the landlord to fix mold problems. So the moment you understand that there's mold, you gotta start figuring out a solution. So repair issues. Repairs with mold are the major issue, but I also see repairs issues with major issues like plumbing, electrical work, foundational work, roofing, well, leaks, all kinds of stuff.
I'll tell you, air quality is obviously a big deal. And if you're in your apartment and you're wheezing, or you're having respiratory issues, or there's elderly or children that you think are being affected, and you suspect mold, or maybe you've got some proof of it. Maybe something chipped away from the wall and it's behind the wall, because that's probably one of the common situations a landlord just paints over or plasters over.
Or bleaches it, yeah.
And so you're in this toxic environment. Like, what do you do?
Well, the first thing you have to do and what the law requires is to send a written notice to the landlord. That's super, super, super important, because without a written notice, the landlord's just going to say, I never heard about it. Do not text them about this. In fact, don't ever text your landlord about anything important or call them about anything important. That's just good general advice for anything. Anything important with the landlord needs to go into an email or a letter, okay? Because that's going to be useful as evidence if you ever do end up in court. First place to start here, though, if you find mold, take some pictures of it and send those pictures in a written letter, either through the mail or through email, to your landlord. The landlord at that point has 10 days to start addressing the problem. Unfortunately, that starts to get into where the law is weak.
Yeah, 10 days. I mean, maybe you've had someone come in maybe they're not an expert or scientist because you're not able to pay that person necessarily to do sampling or something, but you have someone else that comes in that maybe has some background in mold remediation, and they say, yeah, this is definitely a mold problem. Look here, 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 I can smell it. Now you're supposed to live in that apartment for the next 9 days.
And that's the thing, is unfortunately that this is where the law is very weak. And the landlord, all they have to do is disclose the presence of mold to you up front in the lease contract. And most of you have probably seen those mold disclosures attached to your lease.
Jesus.
They're about 7 to 8 pages long. They talk about how to clean up stuff. But if the landlord doesn't fix it after 10 days, your only option is to break your lease and move out. That's it.
And so if you're going into this agreement and there's some hidden in your 14 pages of your lease, because it really is going to be hidden if it's in the middle somewhere, it says there may or may not be mold, or there is mold, or there's been some allegations of mold in here and we haven't checked, we haven't pulled off things. I mean, that's it?
That's pretty much it. They just have to disclose that it might be a,
that's crazy.
A problem.
I agree. They might know it's really bad.
They might be fully aware of that. And it's also impossible to sue a landlord for personal injury from mold-related health effects. So all I can tell you here is pay attention to this while you're voting, because this is a political issue and this has to be solved in Olympia. But also, the moment you start noticing mold, start making plans to move, because the landlord's probably not going to be able to fix it.
So in addition to moving, which you're right, I mean, that though is going to end up getting you sued later. We can talk about that in a second. But can you withhold rent? Because folks would call me and they'll say, hey, Noah, I've got this issue. Maybe it's mold. I'm not going to pay my landlord until they fix this. Is that something that you can do?
One of the very first clauses in the Landlord-Tenant Act, unfortunately, and you can tell that this was written by the landlord side, but one of the very first clauses in the Landlord-Tenant Act says, payment of rent is conditioned to exercising the remedies under this chapter, meaning if you don't pay the rent, you can't use the law. So what I usually tell tenants is you've got to keep the rent flowing no matter what. There are some... There's what I call a unicorn law in the Landlord-Tenant Act about withholding rent and getting your own bids and going out and doing the work. I call it a unicorn because I've read about it in the books of the law. I've never actually seen it in the real world work. So I don't advise tenants to go through that route. I'm only bringing it up now because it exists, but I'm not advising anybody to go through it because it's extremely complicated and I've never seen it work before. But you do not withhold the rent. That's going to get you evicted immediately, probably within 3 days.
Okay. I want to talk about that 3-day eviction notice and how that plays out in court. I've seen it. I've not defended someone in that sort of ex parte emergency style court action, but I've seen it.
I've seen it
play out, right. But I have defended people that were sued after they moved out. They were sued for breach of the lease. They were said that they, I gave you that example of the cleaning fee where they had provided a cleaning fee, but now they're charged an additional. There wasn't a checklist, or maybe all these things weren't on the checklist. They were charged for like a broken window and that sort of things. And what happens is the landlord will turn that issue, this amount, $1,000 or whatever it is, over to a collection agency. And usually in your landlord-tenant agreement, there's an attorney fee provision too, or some collection fees. And so it gets turned over to a collection agency. They then contact the tenant, and ultimately it gets to the point where they serve them a summons and complaint. They don't file it. This is a common play out in Washington state. It's terrible. It's also a fix that needs to happen both to the civil
Agreed.
Rules and the statute. But
I call it the shady eviction.
It is so bad. But in this case, you've moved out, and then the case I'm talking about, you've moved out and you're served a summons and complaint, but it's not filed. And they wait until 20 days. And on the 21st day, they end up filing it. So you can go to court and show the court in your county the lawsuit and say, hey, I was served this. And they say, we've got no record of it. There's no case number here. There's no name associated with it. It's not been filed. So then you think you're okay. On the 21st day, they file it and get a default judgment against you. And next thing you know about this case is a garnishment that gets hit. And it's terrible, terrible. So don't ignore it if you get a summons and complaint. Yeah. But I want to shift gears and talk to the eviction situation where you're still living there. So how does that process play out?
Well, it's, and I don't know if I can get into that in too much detail with the time that we've got left. But generally, one thing I will say, as folks that are listening to this, and especially in Tacoma, in Pierce County, King County, and Snohomish County, I cut my teeth at the Housing Justice Project. That's where I learned how to do this stuff. I graduated from law school during a time when unemployment was pretty high, so I went and worked as a volunteer for a while, and I represented a lot of tenants in evictions. And it's a hot button thing, but the best thing I could tell you is try to go in there with an attorney. There's lots of attorneys that volunteer on this at the Housing Justice Projects in these three counties. So if you're going to get hit with an eviction, try to contact one of those organizations, either in Pierce, King, or Snohomish counties. Elsewhere in the rest of the state, see if you can pick up the phone and at least speak with an attorney about your civil rights and how to drag out a civil litigation, because it's something that you don't want to ignore. You want to respond to anything that they're asking you to respond to immediately, and you want to accept all papers that are being served to you so that you know exactly what's going on. Don't try to do the ostrich thing and put your head down in the sand. Confront it head on.
But you come back to your apartment and there's a three-day notice or something. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, the three-day notice to pay or vacate is going to mean that you need to come up with that rent in those 3 days, or you're probably going to be served with eviction papers on the fourth day. Okay. And at that point, you'll have another 3 to 4 weeks as the eviction case plays out to pay that money into the court. But it's going to cost a lot more in court because attorney's fees and court costs will be added on at that point.
On the fourth day, they can't come in and seize your property in your place.
No, they cannot do that. That's and that's a lot of tenants that call me think that that's what's going to happen. So don't worry about that. You will have your day in court, so to speak. But don't let them default judgment you by not responding to the initial papers that you get. That happens all the time, is the tenant ignores it and then they lose the case by not playing. It's kind of like a forfeit when one team doesn't show up to the game.
And the landlord also can't prevent you from moving out, right? They can't like physically bar you or anything.
No, they can't chain you to the place. Nobody's holding a gun up to your head and forcing you to stay on a rental property. So vacate is an option as well.
And if you have paid your first and last month's rent, I mean, there is some money available for the landlord at that point too, right?
That's true. And it depends on where you're at in your lease contract at that point and how many months left you're going to have on your contract and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, if you've got a deposit out there and a last month's rent, that should cover at least some of the bills.
I mean, the key is you don't want to ignore these sorts of things, right?
Very, very important.
And if you do ignore it, like you said, you're going to get defaulted. And then the next thing you know, you might get locked out of your place, right?
Mm-hmm. Because if you get defaulted, that's basically if you fail to respond to an eviction summons against you. What the landlord's attorney is going to go do is ask the court to basically let them win the case by forfeit because you didn't show up. And at that point, a writ of restitution will be issued. They're going to give that to the sheriff.
Yep.
The sheriff's going to come post that on your door. At that point, you only have 72 hours to get off the property. And if you don't, that's when the sheriff actually shows up and escorts you off the property and puts all your stuff out on the sidewalk.
So by responding to that initial three-day notice, you're buying yourself an additional period of time.
Exactly.
So you need to make sure that you do a written response in the way that that three-day notice tells you to do it, right?
Exactly. And keep all the evidence for yourself, too, just in case because the landlord's going to pretend you didn't do it. You know? That happens sometimes.
Before we leave off, I just want to mention, too, that the firm that you work at, Lombino Martino, is associated with Legal Shield, and folks can buy a membership and end up getting advice directly from you on landlord-tenant issues if they've signed up with Legal Shield. Is that right?
That's correct, and that's part of the reason that I like working at this firm is I'm able to talk to a lot of tenants through this service that I wouldn't normally be able to talk to otherwise, because tenants generally can't afford $200 to $300 an hour.
You've been listening to Know Your Rights with Jonathan White. Jonathan, thank you very much for joining us today.
Hey, you're welcome, Noah. Glad to be here.
Join us next week, same time, Tuesdays at 4 o'clock on Know Your Rights on Clay, 1180 AM.